strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, we are giving away Suns playoff tickets. We're going to give you a chance today on this show. We're doing it four times a day in the 7 o'clock hour on Arizona's Morning News and the 11 o'clock hour on this show. And at 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. in those hours as well, your chance to snag exclusive Phoenix Suns code words. Then when you hear the code word, you text that word to 411923 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Make sure you're listening in the 11 o'clock hour today on my show as we will be letting you enter to win those tickets. So we've been talking about this a little bit, about what it takes to be concerned, to be considered middle class. I don't know what the goals are in your mind for your salary, what would make you comfortable, what you're happy with, what you're aspiring to. But here are some statistics for us just by state. Arizona, it takes to be considered middle class, the lower end, this is for individuals, the lower end of being middle class is at $49,000, $49,700, and the higher end, before you're considered to be the upper end or the upper class as far as pay goes, is just under $150,000 a year. So there's a $100,000 spread in there in what's considered to be middle class in Arizona. And it's based on Arizona's median income and the economy and the other things as well. The reason why I start with this is when we talk with people about the state of the economy, it often is in terms of fairness. It's this isn't fair, that isn't fair. The vast majority of aspiring homeowners say they can't afford the American dream. 78% of would-be home buyers cited financial factors when asked what was holding them back from making the purchase. This survey, the most common challenges cited by respondents was insufficient income. 56% of people don't believe they make enough money to buy a home. 47% saying prices are too high, and the inability to afford down payment cost and closing costs is 42%. I don't want to say we're entitled. I don't ever want to feel as if we're entitled to anything. We're not. There is a level of income that people need to achieve in order to have a comfortable life. That's a lesson for people. I just talked about this earlier today, and this is more than anything else. I would love to be able to talk to young people about those decisions. When I was young, I had absolutely no direction. I literally lived hand to mouth by choice, and I got up, went to work, cashed my check on Friday, got back up on Monday, went back to work, and that was the way I was going to live my life. And there wasn't any forethought, there wasn't any planning. And I was very fortunate to get into a trade, which then I figured out I really liked. It still wasn't about a future. It was about something I really enjoyed that could put me on a pathway to stability. And I never worried about stability. But for my entire adult life, I've never been unemployed when it wasn't my choice in two careers. And it's not because of me necessarily. It's not about anything exceptional about me. The point I'm making with this entire conversation is, you, wherever you are financially, one of the things we try to do with our children, with younger people, if we ever have an opportunity, the entrepreneurs that I know, the people that I know that have been very successful, have made a lot of money throughout their lives, and they now find themselves in a financially secure position, is they reach out to younger people with advice more than anything else of, don't make the mistakes I made. When I was going through a difficult time with my business, my friends rallied around me with advice on, don't worry, you know, this seems like it's insurmountable. You're going to be okay. It was very difficult at the time, but on the other side of it, everything they said to me was correct. If there was one thing I could impart on younger people, it would be being more mindful of the life that you have. That even at a young age, when you feel as if you got your entire life in front of you, which you do, time will eventually catch up with you, and you want to make sure you're planning for it. You want to make sure that you're making some smart moves so that you can lead the life that you want to lead. These numbers matter. And the reason why they matter is figuring out in your mind, how am I going to make that kind of money? What is it that's going to make me happy? And money doesn't necessarily make you happy. But what can I do in my life to make the living that's necessary for me to be comfortable as I get older? What is going to give me the life I want? What does that mean for you? For other people, it's different things. But we don't have conversations in that context with younger people. We talk about unfairness. We talk about all these different things. But what about what it actually takes? When you're a sophomore in high school, are you going to go to college? If so, great. How are you getting the grants you need? What are you doing about getting scholarships? What are you doing about joining clubs for your resume to get into school? What do you want to study? And do you have any idea what that career path is going to pay you over the career that you have? And is that going to afford you the life you want? If you're someone that's got the taste for the nicer things, you're going to have a job that pays more. Life isn't fair. No one's going to hand you anything. I love these stories about the economy and what it takes to be at a certain level. And I think parents are smart to tell their kids, my mom just worked. My mom had no choice. We watched her and she didn't sit us down and talk to all of us about work ethic. And we didn't have those kinds of family meetings at the dinner table. But we watched my mom just get out of bed and work 7 days a week for a long time, working sometimes three jobs. We watched someone that never made excuses, and we didn't make excuses. If we made mistakes, we paid for them. We were as careful as we needed to be. There was a lot of luck along the way, and we had help as well. But we watched her work. And that's one thing that's been consistent in our family has been a work ethic. And that is something more than anything else that was helpful to me. And I look at these things in the stories, are you middle class in your state and home ownership? And I look at what's happening with the way people and businesses are. People are fleeing high tax states. We can turn this political if you want. I can turn it political. But when you are living in a place where the government steps in and is taking bigger and bigger pieces of your pie, when yesterday we talked about how much money do you actually have to earn to bring home $100,000 once you're into that tax bracket. In Arizona, you have to make over $142,000 in order to bring home $100,000, which means between local, state, and federal taxes, they're taking $42,000 from you. That's over $800 a week. What could you do if you had 20% of that? If you had $170, let's say. If you had $170 a week more than you do now, how much better would your life be? And do you think you should be able to pay 20% less in taxes? The answer is yes. This is the critical eye for people of what we do with the governments we elect. All of that's part of it. There are blue states now that are losing people because of the high taxes in that state, and they're trying to come up with ways to tax people on their way out to keep some of that income in their state. It's ridiculous what's happening. But we have a quality of life issue in the U.S. that we're in control of. And what I mean by that is if we're informed voters, if we are engaged voters, we make decisions on who has the budgets. We just got done, and we're going to talk more about it later on. We just got done speaking with a man named John Simon. He is a trooper here, a state trooper here in Arizona, but he is also the president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 32, and they represent about 80% of the troopers here in the state of state of Arizona. Isn't it fascinating that they're talking about budget cuts across the budget here in Arizona because of shortfalls in the budget, and they include public safety in with everything else as if there's no prioritization? We prioritize on our own budget. When you have a shortfall in income, when prices increase to the point where you have to change things in your budget, you still prioritize the things that are most important. Everyone I know that's elected to office, running for local office or statewide office, they always say public safety first. They always say public safety first. They run to the organizations like the FOP or in Phoenix, the plea office or the firefighters unions, and they want an endorsement. They want to be able to put it on their campaign stuff that I'm endorsed by public safety. Public safety endorsed. And now you treat them like everybody else. Doesn't make any sense. If we have to prioritize, they should have to prioritize. Coming up in a moment, we're going to go nationally and at the federal level. At the federal level, we are hearing the FBI director continue to say we are at greater danger for terrorism in America. What could that mean to you? We'll talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. It is a great day to have a great day. Thanks for being here. The FBI director has been sounding the alarm on a heightened threat environment. The FBI director has warned lawmakers that the threat of terrorism has risen to a whole other level since October 7th. I'm going to go down a familiar road for just a minute. This doesn't make any sense to me on any level. When we've seen an uprising. When something happens, we have a reaction to it most of the time. And here's what I mean. We have an uptick of squatters. So we have state legislatures and local jurisdictions that are revising laws. As a matter of fact, there was just a big case in New York of how they were able to get squatters out of a $1 million home. And so that they're adjusting these rights. That doesn't mean that tenants don't have rights. It means we're closing loopholes so that somebody that's trying to call themselves a tenant under the legal terms can't do that and squat in somebody else's property. That all makes sense. We have organized retail theft. You now see law enforcement and the county attorney's office responding to organized retail theft. We had what's called crime tourism, where people are coming here on visas because of the friendly relationship we have with other countries. So it's the ease of processing coming on these visas with the express purpose of breaking into higher end homes, stealing things from people and selling it online. What was the response? We saw law enforcement respond in a big way across the East Valley. I'll tell you, the Scottsdale police chief on the front end of informing the public, holding public hearings and telling people what they can do to protect themselves. And they made arrests. The Phoenix Police Department, like they always do, responding to the needs of the community. They made arrests in the Phoenix Police Department and doing stellar work in that regard, responding to a crisis as it pops up. And here we have, in the wake of, and we're still, this is the problem, is that 9/11 was so many years ago, over 20 years ago, but we said never again. I mean, I remember that day vividly. Anybody that's old enough to have a real memory of it, if you weren't a small child or not born yet, we all remember how we felt on 9/11. And we swore then never again. We changed so many things about public transportation and all of these other things we do because we want to be able to protect people from disaster and terrorists that would do something like they did on 9/11. And here we have no response or very little response to what's happening. Now, I don't mean that as an insult, because I know within the sound of my voice, there are probably at least a few people listening that are involved in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, either at the federal level or the local level, where it is their job to keep a lid on terrorist activities, that there are people that exhibit levels of threats, and their job is to assess the threat level and keep a lid on it and be actively looking at the people that they deem the most dangerous in our community, doing it within the confines of U.S. laws, but making sure terrorism isn't happening. So I am not trying to cast aspersions. I'm certainly not trying to say they're not doing their jobs. The fact that you and I don't hear about it means they're doing their jobs. We only hear about things that happen. We don't hear about the things they prevent from happening. But when you have the FBI director telling Congress and telling the nation, we're at heightened threats, they have intelligence gatherers across this country whose job it is to watch and listen for these threats. And when you hear them saying our threat level has risen since October 7th, that you've got these radicals across the world that are saying we want lone wolves to rise up and commit acts of terrorism, be willing to give up your life to take the lives of other people. They don't differentiate between civilians. As a matter of fact, they go after civilians. We host here in this valley many big events. Don't think for a moment that public safety isn't at a heightened awareness when we have the Suns games and the D-backs games and we have these things going on. When we have major events like the Final Fours and concerts in parks, and it's a heightened awareness. But what we're not doing is the preventative measures. What we're not doing is the issues at the border. That's a big part of it as well. The porous borders and the gotaways. We are not strengthening our vetting process where people are given a monitoring device and then given passage into the country while they're awaiting asylum hearings. We know, let's just go back to 9/11 for a minute. We know that these were people that came here largely, came here on visas. They overstayed their visas, which we didn't enforce. There was no oversight. They were learning to fly airplanes, but not learning to land them. In hindsight, there were warning signs there. And the only thing you can do when there is that horrible dark cloud of a terrorist attack, the only silver lining you can find many times is to learn from it and be better for it when the next threat comes along. And here we are over 20 years later with another threat from the same parts of the world. And it has nothing to do with a religion. It has everything to do with an ideology that you are believing that you are a hero for sacrificing your life to murder as many people that you disagree with as possible. They hate capitalism. They hate the Western way of life. And it would be a feather in their cap to die damaging anyone in the U.S. Whether the long-term of effects of this are good for them or not, the idea of hurting the people that you hate is what they want to do. And why aren't we, and I'm talking about the citizens of this country, why aren't we more aware of what's happening? Why aren't we asking why more isn't being done? I certainly, again, am nothing but thrilled and so thankful for the men and women who are intelligence gatherers, are members of federal and local law enforcement, who diligently 24 hours a day, 7 days a week are on the lookout to prevent this from happening. But when they begin to say there's a heightened threat out there, there's more that's going on, and we don't respond accordingly, when you look at all the other areas, where whether it's houses being robbed or squatters or things being retail theft that's going on, We have an expectation. Throw resources at it. Let's make sure this doesn't happen anymore. We better get on the ball. I just think we need to get on the ball for sure with this. What we're going to do in a moment is talk about policy. And I talked earlier about what it takes to be considered middle class, how much you pay in taxes, some of the policy changes that I think are going to be bad for us, and the numbers attached to it. It's coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, the 2024 Go Red for Women Luncheon takes place May 3rd. JW Marriott Scottsdale Camelback Inn Resort and Spa. You can join us as we go red for women. Visit theheart.org/PHXGoRed to learn more and register. I love to talk about policy. We continue to hear from politicians all the time about the other things that are wrong outside of what they are doing, what they should be controlling. I may get into this, but the FTC is talking about has changed. It is going to change, but there'll be lawsuits against it. The use of no compete clauses, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of it because it's kind of in the weeds and boring, but it is, again, the government trying to control things on the outside. And I understand there needs to be oversight and regulation. I'm not an anti-government person, but let me talk about policy for a moment. Right now, there is a shortage of rental properties that are available for people. There's a shortage of homes for sale that are available for people. But a lot of people make a decision when they're younger in life that a part of their investment, instead of taking big chunks of their money and putting into a retirement account to grow, part of a diversification or a plan is to buy properties, and they're going to use those properties in their retirement years. They'll have renters in those properties that will pay down the mortgage, so they're almost paying for themselves when they do it. And then as they get older, they may take rental income from them or some of those properties. They might sell those properties, and along the way, when they sell them, take the cash, put that in an investment, and use that to retire on. I know. I'm not reinventing the wheel by telling you that, but that's what people are doing. The president is calling for a capital gains tax rate of 44.6%. It's the highest tax since its creation in 1922. So I want you to think about this is the other part of I talk about taxation quite a bit. It's necessary. We all understand. We had somebody on from DPS this morning talking about the governor's office cutting budgets because of a budget shortfall, and it may affect DPS. And we can talk about that at length later on. So we know government is necessary. I would say it's prioritized wrong, but that's a different conversation. I want you to think about that number, 44.6%. So using round numbers, you buy a home and 25 years later, the mortgage is almost paid off. You've had renters in that home. It needs to be remodeled, but you're going to sell it. And let's say over that 25 years, from what you bought it at to what you're going to sell it at, let's use the number of $300,000. Let's say that you made a profit of $300,000 on that home. And I'm not even talking about the capital gains taxes at the state level, whatever you would have to pay in those taxes, but just the capital gains tax of 44.6%. You are going to hand the government. Now, remember, this is your retirement. You're going to hand the government of that $300,000 in profit you made on that home. You're going to give the government $133,800. You're going to give them $133,000 for something they had nothing to do with. You pay property taxes locally on all of these things. You understand that, you know, and then it's counted as income when you have people renting the home throughout the years that you've had it. But this is a part of your retirement. This is your financial stability. This is your retirement years. More and more people in the United States are concerned about Social Security, which is their job to manage, and they haven't. So what they've done, because they are spending at such deficits, is trying to come up with more and more ways. So imagine you have a portfolio, you owe money, you're going to sell a piece of property, you need to sell it, you want to sell it, the cash is going to be part of your retirement. So imagine you get to keep, if you're giving them $134,000, it means you're only keeping a little more than that. At $150,000 is all you're getting to keep. Almost half of it is going to go to taxes. And that's the president's plan. Now, what they're going to tell you is they're going to talk about very wealthy people and how it goes after the rich people. But these are the policies that I think Americans need to take a look at. If you want financial stability in the citizenry, you have to shrink the size and scope of the government. They have to take less from you throughout your life so that you have more to lean back on. I talked earlier about how much you have to pay into. If you live in Arizona, you have to make over $142,000 in a year to take home $100,000. You're paying, if you're in that tax bracket, if you make $142,000 a year, you're paying about $42,000 in taxes, over $800 per week in taxes. Imagine what you could do with that money and how it could add to your financial stability long term. So these are real policy issues that I think are something that we don't hear anybody. Where's the leadership? And I mean this sincerely. Go back, and I know that this is a sad for Republicans, that as Republicans, we continue to go back to Ronald Reagan for the examples and the lessons that we learn and how to teach them. But Ronald Reagan, known as the great communicator, we don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. We are giving far too much of the American tax dollar over, or the American earned dollar in the form of taxes to the government. Period. End of story. I don't care what political party you're in, the vast majority of Americans, this is the part that frustrates me. The majority of Americans believe they're overtaxed. Who is the political party that would be considered a low tax party? It would be my party, the Republican Party. Well, why have we lost all of the statewide seats we have lost? Why do we only have a one seat majority in the state legislature? Why are we seeing us losing the game? It's frustrating that the messaging isn't out there with these policy changes. 44.6%. Is there anybody out there that believes, I don't care what you're selling, if you don't have a house to sell, I don't care what you're selling, if you're selling an automobile, and now they don't appreciate in value, they depreciate, but I want you to think of anything you have that you should have to pay the government. 44.6% of your profit. You worked on it. You maintained it all those years. You've kept renters in there. You've painted it a number of times. You put a new roof on it. You've redone the floors. The walls have been painted so many times with renters in and out. Carpets cleaned, carpets and flooring replaced, new kitchen appliances. You've done everything you need to do to keep that place good and in good order for your renters. And now the government steps in when you sell it and they say that because they've passed a law, they're entitled to almost half of your profit on that home over the years. It to me is absolutely shocking. And there's an ideology that completely disagrees with me, and I'm going to talk more about that later in the show. that there's an ideology out there that absolutely believes that it's the right thing to, for the government to do, to take all this money from people. And I just totally disagree with it. In a moment, we're going to talk about the border. A Texas grand jury has overruled a judge's decision. Remember the migrants that were accused of rioting at the border, cutting through razor wire and storming the border past agents? Well, I'm going to tell you what a judge did and how the citizens have overruled it. We'll get to that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. Border dispute in Texas. If you remember what happened, migrants storming the border, my words, not the story's words, accused of rioting as coming across the border, cutting razor wire, overrunning the National Guard and people that were on the border. Here is Jim Ryan from ABC News with a little bit of a report of the dispute that happened in Texas.
Video from April 12 shows hundreds of migrants breaching a chain-link fence topped by razor wire and rushing at Texas National Guard troops. On Monday, El Paso County Court of Law Judge Ruben Morales found no probable cause for riot charges and dismissed the cases against 141 people. A day later, District Attorney Bill Hicks presented the same evidence to a grand jury and
the grand jurors believe that there was, in fact, probable cause.
And Hicks plans to move forward with the riot charges.
So there you have got citizenry in Texas overruling the judge's idea of what probable cause is. Now, there's going to be legal discussions. I'm not a lawyer. But what this tells you, I think it's the sentiment. And I think the sentiment is spreading across the country. There is a balance here, and we don't want to go over to the other side of the balance. And here's what I mean. We have got to secure the border for a number of reasons. A, it's the right thing to do for America. Let's start there. For the American people, we have to know that we control our borders, period. End of story. We should control the borders. We should dictate who comes and goes at our border. It shouldn't be the migrants that have come here and through chain migration or bringing family members. I'm not talking about immediate family members. I mean, extended family members. They shouldn't be choosing the next generation of migrants. It should be done through a merit-based and through the decisions of the American people. Secondly, we've got to secure the border because of the drugs and the dangerous people that are crossing. The cartels are now dictating border crossers. They effectively control our border. Why isn't anybody else angry about that? We're angry about all the other things that are happening when people that are doing things illegally, whether it's a felony or it's not, when people are doing the wrong thing and we're not doing anything about it. But let's also talk about the migrants that are crossing, the sexual assault that happens to women on the journey. This is something that is so underreported, and I don't know why. I don't know why, because I think isn't this a sexual assault awareness month or week? And I may be wrong. Look it up. I just saw it in a news story that it's about sexual assault awareness. And I will tell you, I think it is a despicable crime. It is a horrifying crime that you would prey upon somebody sexually. It's demoralizing. It damages people emotionally. It takes them so long to get over it. And the people that they love, it is a horrible crime. Every woman that crosses the border is told the chances of her being sexually assaulted is almost 100%. They prepare for it. They bring the morning after pills with them, not just one, multiple times. The expectation of sexual assault is huge. And yet, we're continuing to foster a system that the cartels are allowing these things to happen. So we know about those crimes. We know about child trafficking. We know about the unaccompanied minors that we can't account for. We're not doing anything about it. So here you have a case where migrants in a mob mentality storm a fence, overrun the National Guard and other people there at the border. And a judge says no probable cause here, but a grand jury says there is. What this is saying is these are the people of Texas that are saying enough is enough. I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand the threshold for probable cause. Is the grand jury right? Is the judge right? I'm talking about the frustration of people. And this frustration is spread across the country. Cities that are classically known as and self-described as sanctuary cities are saying no more. There was just a news story this morning that said based on the border alone, these are staunch liberal Democrat voters in Chicago, Illinois, saying that you're going to see many voters in the city of Chicago voting for President Trump in droves because they're tired of what's happening in the city of Chicago. That doesn't mean that they agree with a single policy decision he'll make outside of the border, but they're that frustrated. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to be a walkover election for him either. This is about the feelings of people. When you start having the American people have this kind of an attitude toward immigration, because it's all called, they're all called migrants. Everybody's called a migrant. I use the word migrant because it's the word of the day that's supposed to be used. You're not supposed to say illegal immigrant. It makes people bristle when you use it. But it is illegal immigration. There is a distinction between people that come here legally and people that come here illegally. And if we don't make that distinction and designation, it muddies the water for the people that did it the right way. It muddies the water for the people that are doing it the right way. I will tell you that I, like many people, know dreamers, have met dreamers, that have known dreamers that have come here with their families. They were brought here by no fault of their own. They live a life as an American, and they should be treated as Americans. You want to know why there's pushback against the dreamers? It's not because people are racist or xenophobic or don't care. It's because they're watching the next generation come. They're saying, when is this revolving door going to stop? When are we going to force people to do it the right way? And unfortunately, the dreamers get caught in the switches, and they shouldn't. Someone in their 30s that's been raised in America through no fault of their own should be able to leave the country when it's available to them. They should live as Americans, but that should have been taken care of decades ago when they were children, not now that they're in their 30s. And we shouldn't be creating the next generation of them. The American people have a right to be frustrated. The people of Texas have a right to say enough is enough. And when are we going to finally, as a people, say, hold our legislators accountable? We're going to have a conversation tomorrow on the show with Congressman Juan Ciscomani, who is a naturalized citizen here and a congressman. We'll talk to him about this very topic. Coming up just after 10 o'clock, we are going to talk about our ballot breakdown and the trials and tribulations of the former president.